My name is Bernard Guerra, and I'm your host of the Apartment Investor Series podcast, where I provide an in-the-trenches look at the multifamily real estate market. I have been fortunate for nearly 25 years as a broker to learn from and witness what super successful apartment investors have been doing with their investment properties. This podcast highlights how the experts are maximizing their multifamily investing. Let's get started. Hello, we're here today with Bruce Kaminsky. Bruce, how are you today?
I'm great, great, Bernie. Thanks for having me.
Absolutely. So what is your title at Wintrust Bank?
So I'm an executive vice president. I lead our multinational commercial banking team. So think about that. All of our clients are non-U.S. companies that are investing in the U.S. or what a lot of people just call foreign direct investment.
Got it. So you have the relationships with those companies and do the banking for them, essentially?
Yeah. Whatever they need. Sometimes it's capital raising. Sometimes it's M&A. Sometimes it's treasury related or other investments. It's kind of a broad range of solutions we provide.
Yeah, sounds like it. And, you know, that's a little bit different than the multifamily market that, you know, my listeners were are really dealing with, but I think it's great to get a different perspective on the banking market. So,
sure.
Given that the recent last 2 years, especially with the Fed policy, has been making changes with interest rates and all these changes have been happening, what have been the biggest impacts you've seen with the banking and lending businesses?
Yeah, I think it's a, you know, it's an interesting dynamic. I think about it kind of in two ways. I think about it how it's really impacted the banks themselves, and okay. then how it's impacted bank clients.
Okay.
You know, it's been a long time since cash had any value, right? Because we've had, you know, historically low interest rates for, you know, 15, 16 years.
Right.
So there are plenty of people that have, you know, their entire career, cash has been basically, you know, worthless unless you could invest it in something that was some type of earning asset. But now cash by itself is valuable.
Interesting.
That's how banks fund themselves. So now in order to hold on to that cash, fund their businesses, which, you know, lending, essentially for commercial banks, you have to pay more for that. So costs for banks have gone up. It's much more competitive. And you certainly saw that with some of the recent bank failures earlier this year is when deposits leave, they have to utilize other sources of financing that are much, much more expensive, even if they're available. And so that creates losses, and it's kind of a sort of a trickle down effect on the balance sheet of banks. So it's been difficult for banks if you don't have diversified streams of income. So a lot of the big banks have done well because they have lots of different income streams through other fee type businesses, M&A or investments, those type of things. But your small community banks or regional banks, they rely a lot on deposits and lending. So it's been difficult for them.
In real basic question, what does M&A mean?
Just mergers and acquisitions.
Okay,
so,
got it.
You know, helping them find, you know, external ways to grow their business as opposed to just doing everything organically. And so it's, you know, the M&A market, I think, is still pretty robust. Not like it was, you know, the last few years. But it's people are always looking to, you know, make appropriate investments, and valuations have come down because of interest rates, cost of capital. So there are things that are starting to become more attractive from a valuation standpoint. But if you think about the general banking client or even your clients that may have to borrow, it's pretty obvious that it's a lot more expensive to do that. And again, it's an environment that people are not used to over the last decade and a half. So they're going through an adjustment period, trying to understand, you know, what does it really cost for me to meet my strategic priorities? Because it's changed a lot the last, you know, 12 to 18 months. So there's weakness out there. Although I know you deal primarily in the multifamily space, anecdotally, it's you know, real estate is all local, right? So it just depends on what market you're in. But, you know, in Chicago, we see multifamily as being robust. It's still pretty strong, even given the interest rate environment. Really outside of kind of your commercial office space in the big cities.
Right.
Most asset classes in commercial real estate are still doing relatively well, especially warehouse space, right? Amazon cannot get enough warehouse space. So,
yeah, absolutely. And you know, interesting enough, the cannabis industry in Oregon has been buying up office space the last 5-7 years.
Really?
So that's made the prices, industrial space, warehouses.
Industrial space. Yeah, sure.
Yeah, so it's really priced out the typical investor because they're willing to pay more.
Yep.
That's an interesting local, as you said, real estate being local, that's an interesting local difference maybe between Chicago and Portland.
Yeah, for sure. Although, you know, legal here too.
Right.
You know, a lot of it comes from, you know, outside of the cities, obviously. But yeah, I mean, it's the same dynamic, right? Is that, you know, the way the distribution model works now is that you need a lot more warehouse space and a lot less retail space.
Got it. So basically with the major effect, you said with the banks themselves and the clients of the bank, you mentioned that it makes cash more valuable. So for investors moving forward, I know my, a lot of investors we deal with now are coming up with their, you know, their fixed rate loans of 5 and 7 years are coming up in the next now to the next 18 months.
Yeah.
So, how does, you know, what are you seeing with that? Should somebody wait? Should they do that now? What are your thoughts?
As far as like locking into longer term?
Well, the fixed rate period is going to be over and they'll be going to an adjustable period. And that obviously for some people, their mortgages will double, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there is some reality to that. I mean, I think if you talk to a lot of people that are experts in interest rates, which if I were, I probably would not be here with you, Bernie, but
no kidding, right? Know, crystal ball.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
But you know, a lot of people think we're kind of at this cycle peak. Mm-hmm. So depending on what you think a typical cycle length is, you know, 5 years out may be totally fine. I don't think we're going to, you know, necessarily be back to zero interest rates again, but there's probably not a huge advantage today of locking it in really long term with the expectations that sometime in the next 5 years, we're probably going to have interest rates come down to some degree.
Yeah.
So I think there's some ability to wait it out a little bit if you got a 5-year horizon.
Yeah, and if you have a short term horizon, some of our clients we're seeing have loans due within 12 months, or not loans due, but the fixed rate period up. So sounds like it might be good just to keep it variable for the short term and let it ride.
Depends on your risk appetite, right?
Risk appetite, right? If you want to sell, you know, now versus, you know, a year or two from now, maybe you do it now if your loan's coming due. So all these things are a factor.
I mean, it must have an effect on your cap rates, right? Because, you know, the returns are expectations are different when the nominal rates are higher. So kind of how is that impacting, you know, your clients from a valuation perspective?
Yeah, cap rates... It took a few months from when rates went up last summer. All the transactions really froze for third and fourth quarter. Mm-hmm. But cap rates, you know, have really been in the fours for years for apartments. You know, I'm talking on the actuals, sometimes in the threes on their actuals. And people are buying in the threes and fours, rehabbing or waiting to raise rents to get it to a 5 or 6. So, yeah, cap rates now are in that, you know, 5 to 6, and hopefully over time you can raise it and make it a 6 or 6.5, but they're still pretty, they've definitely gone up.
Yeah.
And transactions have definitely decreased by about 70% from previous recent history.
Yeah.
So, well, since you do have a lot of international point of view here and experience, is there anything that you've seen with your international clients that can relate specifically to a national level, like maybe trends that you're seeing, or what are people looking for internationally? What is their point of view?
Yeah, I would say, you know, most of the clients that we deal with look at North America as the stable economy, right? Or mm-hmm. or at least the economy that has the most upside at the beginning of the next cycle, whenever that is. So it's not always specific to real estate, but we do talk to our international clients and they're trying to invest more into the US. Sometimes it's in the real estate space. Mm-hmm. I would say again, you know, commercial office is still, they're going through that cycle and it's going to be another few years probably before we really know how that filters out. But mm-hmm. again, you know, hotels, clubs, multifamily, real estate developments, you know, international investors are trying to get involved in those in North America, specifically the U.S., because the alternatives are not great, especially if you're looking at, you know, a European market where GDP is going to be extremely low and maybe not even positive the next year. So there's always a relatively healthy international aspect to investing in the U.S. But now I would say it's probably even more just because the alternatives are pretty weak.
Interesting. Yeah. I was going to ask you, what do you think is affecting that? The Ukraine war is part of it or?
Oh, for sure. Yeah. I mean, certainly in the European continent, you know, energy prices and the impact of energy prices in continental Europe didn't end up being quite as bad as they thought because the winter wasn't as bad as they thought it was going to be.
Right.
But it's still an issue. You know, net importers of oil. So they don't control a lot of that. Mm-hmm. And so that certainly makes an impact on it. And that conflict, the longer it goes on, the more the impact will be seen.
Yeah, it's certainly unsettling
for
everyone because it has so many effects, like you said, with energy costs mm-hmm. and not to mention just the fact of all the people displaced with war and all the bad stuff that comes with that. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Well, what do you see going forward? You said you're talking about the next cycle. What do you see going forward over the next, 6 months to 2 years?
Yeah, it's a unique cycle, right? Because mm-hmm. we still have an extremely strong labor market. We're starting to see a little bit of a weakness there, which I think will be good as you think about potential future rate increases. There are some data mm-hmm. points that suggest that the actions they've taken before are starting to have an impact. You know, I guess my base case would be that we don't see any more rate increases. Certainly if we mm-hmm. stay along the path we are right now, but it's only been a couple months. So, you know, I don't know if that's a trend yet or not, but mm-hmm. if we stay kind of in this trend we are in right now, I can't see any additional rate increases. But I also believe that they're going to probably stay at this level for a while. I think it's pretty well expected that the Fed wants to really see us get back close to 2% before they really think about how they may impact any type of rate increases into the next environment. So I kind of feel like we limp along. That's sort of what it feels like. There's not an enormous upside in the market right now, but it's hard to see an enormous downside either.
Yeah, and when you said 2%, you were talking about inflation.
Yeah, the 2% inflation target, which is, you know, part of the dual mandate of the Fed.
Got it, yeah. Yeah, it's funny. I asked that question of people in different industries, mortgage brokers, residential real estate brokers, and it's really interesting how your answer mirrors other people's. Everybody seems to be really consistent, saying limp along, probably not too many rent increases. It's going to be a little bit of time until we get inflation under control. So everybody's really, it's interesting. They're saying very similar things from different industries.
Well, again, I think it goes back to the fact that we, while where rates are now is historically mm-hmm. more in line with what the average is.
Right, right.
But if you look at the last 15 years, it feels really high. Right. So people have to go through that adjustment period, mm-hmm. understanding how that impacts their lives or it impacts how they're going to think about their priorities. And that doesn't really happen overnight. I mean, we've gone from basically zero rates to 5.5% in 18 months.
Right.
That's very fast increase into the interest rate environment. So.
Yeah. It doesn't gradually go up so people can adjust on the fly. Just interest rates tend to shoot up quickly when they go up.
Well, that's what causes problems, frankly,
right.
for the banks. You know, the banks can manage through kind of gradual increases or gradual decreases. But when it happens quickly like that, and what happened with some of the, you know, Signature Bank and SVB is that they had longer term investments that they couldn't unwind quick enough through the rapid increases in interest rates.
Interesting.
So the speed of the rate increases has other dynamics that impact the market economy, and specifically sometimes for banks if their balance sheets are probably not aligned properly.
Yeah, it's really interesting hearing the bank's point of view, because you don't often hear that when you hear, you know, listen to the news, real estate news or the market news on TV. You're not necessarily getting the bank's perspective, so appreciate it.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this may or may not relate. What opportunities are you seeing for investments then in this unique market from your perspective?
Yeah, I mean, we're probably not like we were in kind of the 2009, 2010 timeframe, where valuations had come down so much that if you had fresh capital, you could pretty much make any investment and you were going to get a really good return. But we're starting to see some of that weakness, right? Valuations are coming down. And as valuations come down, then certain types of investments become more interesting, right? Same in your business. If you've got somebody that likes to invest in certain types of multifamily projects and they have cash, they can probably wait a little bit longer and they're going to get a better price that as we move into that next cycle will become more valuable. So for me, it's always having the requisite amount of liquidity or capital to make investments when valuations are in a better position for whatever priorities you may have in whatever market. So I think I think that will happen. You'll see more mergers and acquisitions. You'll see more investments. The rich will probably get richer because that's kind of what happens in these cycles.
Yeah.
But there will be opportunities, I think, for investors to deploy that capital.
Yeah, and that makes a lot of sense, where it does remind me, too, of the people that have cash coming out of the last cycle really were in a good spot.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they were getting, you know, in percentage terms, they were getting 30-40% on their investments, which is kind of a once-in-a-lifetime sort of scenario.
Totally. Well, okay, so I know in your past, you spent 3 years in Belgium running the Belgian office of your company?
Yes. Yep, I did. Yep.
So what do you miss most about Belgium?
Oh, the food, for sure. That's an easy one. The food and the beer.
Right.
You know, there's 400 different types of, or 400 brew, I guess you call them brewery, they're not all brewers, in Belgium. And, you know, it's flavorful beer.
Right.
You know,
the classic.
It's not as watered down. You know, it's higher alcohol content. So it's, you know, it is part of a meal most times in Belgium. So, but the food and the beer for sure.
Did you have a favorite food dish there? What are Belgians famous for with their food?
Mussels is what they're known for in a lot of ways. They're close to the sea, right? So they a lot of different types of varieties of mussels that they prepare. So, and it's got a lot of French influence too, right? Because they're close to France. Although, don't tell the Belgians that. I'm gonna get that.
Right. Revoke your Belgium travel card if they hear that. You know. Well, anything else that you think non-banking experts would benefit knowing moving forward that they may not know? And I mean a trick question here, but
yeah, I would. You know, as you think about it more from just from an overall financial perspective, I guess is the way I would look at it. I always start getting nervous when I feel like I know what's going to happen.
Right.
If I start to get confident and I'm like, oh, I think this is probably the way it's going to go, that's usually when it goes the opposite direction.
Right.
So I think it's always kind of checking yourself, making sure that what you're using to make a decision are the right variables. Try to avoid being overconfident because that can lead to bad outcomes. But also don't be too conservative. You know, there are going to be opportunities in this marketplace that you can capitalize on and have a really, really good return. So it's trying to get that balance of making sure that you're appropriately thinking about an investment, not being too conservative, not being too aggressive.
Yeah, that's really I love that point of every time I think I know it's going. I just never got into the prediction business because it's always wrong.
It's really hard to be right. That's the reality.
Yeah, you just can kind of get the general, have your general concept down of what you're trying to do. And I, you know, my clients will ask me these things, and I just say, look, just keep focusing on your goals.
Yeah.
What are your 10-year goals? And if you have a property that you want, don't want to be the owner of in 10 years, maybe now is the time to sell it.
Absolutely. Yep.
And if there's a property that you want to buy that you want to own in 10 years, don't worry about the price or the rates right now. Make sure you get a hold of it and run it the way you want to run it.
Yep.
So I like that. That point of view of really great. No, don't be too conservative and don't be too aggressive.
Yep.
Know where you're getting your information and not being overconfident. And, look for the opportunities.
They'll be there.
Yeah.
But you want to make sure they fit you, because one person's, you know, opportunity may not be yours.
Yeah. And I like you said that cashing, the awareness of cash having more power than in a low interest rate market, is really big too. I think what I'm seeing now is people aren't able to afford as much as they were used to.
Right.
And like you said, just being in tune with your own situation, if you can't afford a $2 million property because of your cash situation, there's nothing wrong with looking at a $1 million property and going at it from a position of strength versus maybe not quite as strong with a higher price.
Absolutely. I think that falls right in line with recalibrating
when
you're thinking about your priorities. If you're taking and looking at things exactly the same way you did 2 years ago, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah, I really love recalibrating. That should be the name of this podcast. It's great.
You can have
a real estate podcast.
I don't need any royalties off that.
Oh, thank you.
You can have that one for free.
Oh, how about that? Well, thank you, Bruce. Appreciate your time. And
absolutely.
If anybody has any questions on international banking, can they email you?
Of course.
Great. What's your email address?
It's B Comiskey, which is spelled C-O-M-I-S-K-E-Y, at Wintrust, WINTRUST.com.
Thanks so much. And how are the Belgian fries?
The Belgian fries are awesome. I probably am going to lose my Belgian card for not mentioning those as well, but they're so... Now they're so known throughout the world that I feel like I don't even have to support them.
That's true.
And the waffles.
And the waffles, right.
Yep.
And it's not mayonnaise, it's aioli, right?
Yeah.
With the fries.
You don't see a lot of ketchup there.
Right.
But they probably are not going to get mad. You can put whatever sauce you want on there.
That sounds great. Well, thanks, Bruce, for your time, and love to talk to you again soon.
Thanks, Bernie.
Okay, thank you very much for listening.
Okay.
If you like this episode and want to hear more, subscribe to our podcast where we release new episodes weekly. If you want more information about the multifamily market, go to my firm's website, josephbernard.net, click on the Contact Us page, and sign up for our apartment e-newsletter. As a bonus for listening to this podcast, I will answer any apartment investing questions you may have via email at bgarrett@josephbernard.net. That is BGEHRET@josephbernard.net.